Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. Our mission is to provide stories and resources that will give you inspiration to explore all of the possibilities that your life can be. The possibilities are limitless, and guess what? So are you. It begins with believing. Believing in yourself, believing that the future is yours to write, believing that you can not only write your desired future, but that you have everything that you need to write it, edit it as needed, and fully and wonderfully live it. And you don't have to wait. You can start today. The pen truly is in your hand. I cannot wait to share this week's conversation with you. Excited to share today's conversation with you. I knew when we were recording it that it was special, and I just finished editing it, and it confirmed my first impression. I absolutely adore this conversation. Today's guest is a licensed psychologist with over 35 years of experience. He's also a life coach. He is also a best-selling author and yoga instructor. His book, Full Heart Living, Conversations with the Happiest People I Know, is an Amazon bestseller. Whether he is counseling, writing, teaching, his passion for helping people live their best lives flow through. And this conversation is absolutely no exception to that. I know that you're going to love meeting him, and his name is Tom Glaser. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Bobby. It's a pleasure.
I think it's going to be a great conversation. So, why don't we just jump in, and would you tell the listeners just a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, my name's Tom Glaser. By trade, I'm a psychologist, so that's how I make money, is sitting mostly one-on-one with people or with couples and just helping them with whatever troubles them in their lives. A few years ago, I wrote this book, Full Heart Living, Conversations with the Happiest People I Know, which I'll tell you about in a minute. But before doing that, I always just like to say a few things just about me, right? Just so the listener has an idea, right? So I'm a dog lover. I'm a sun lover. I was telling you I'm in Palm Springs for the winter, but most of the year I'm in Minneapolis. I love to hike and walk, and I'm learning to play pickleball. And
Everyone talks about how fun that is.
It's really fun. It's harder than it looks, in my humble opinion.
Really?
Well, yeah. There's rules and a kitchen. Follow them. You can't go into the kitchen. And
oh my God. I got to check it out.
Absolutely. Highly recommend it. It's, you know why it's fun? All right. I wasn't going to go here, but it's so appropriate to what we're going to be talking about. The funnest part of pickleball, of course, there's the challenge of the hand-eye coordination and the rules and all that, which I was referring to, but it's the social element. It's so social. And it's accessible. And this is the number one thing. It's the connections with people and that we'll be going over in a minute.
Yeah, that is so important. When it's lacking, it takes such a toll on us, right?
Absolutely. I mean, when we have it, we thrive. It's like air and water, right? It's essential to our being and our well-being.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that too often we're not recognizing that enough. Just how essential it is.
Correct.
So that's a great point about the pickleball.
So let's go here. The number one thing I learned in my book project is that happier people connect deeply with other people.
Yeah.
They have a tribe or tribes. Usually it's plural. Most people have several, you know, areas. Like pickleball for me is becoming one of my tribes.
Interesting. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, or family, the family of creation, the family of origin. Then there's some close-in friends.
Yeah.
There's work colleagues, huge.
That's huge. And that is one of the things, too, because I used to work at a law firm. This was way back in the 90s. And it was a big law. It was a medium-sized law firm for Chicago at the time. So I don't know. We had 300-400 people, something like that. But some of my closest friends were at work. And then when I left and I started my own business, that was the aspect that I had not accounted for, is now you don't see those people every day. And you lose some of that.
Bobby.
Really? You experience that too?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I had always worked in organizations.
Yeah.
Eventually I went solo private practice.
Yep.
And I was so lonely after a few years.
Same thing.
So lonely. Even though I'm with clients, it's a different relationship. I didn't have
totally
anybody
different.
To just chat with at the kitchen or hang out with over lunch or go for a walk with.
That and was one of the unexpected things for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Me too.
I'm glad it wasn't just me.
No. And that's when I realized that work provides so many things for us that we need, a sense of when we like our work. There's
that's
a
right.
sense of purpose. It's a way we give back. Mm-hmm. But it's also very highly social. It meets a lot of those social needs. And it's worth knowing that and appreciating it and making the most of it, because it's also easy to take it for granted.
And I think that it's very easy to take it for granted. And I think that the pandemic, like some of my clients, they had such a tight culture before the pandemic. And then the pandemic hit and now they're working remotely and suddenly they don't have the same level of support. You don't have that time over the water cooler or going to lunch. And you also don't have, like, if you're just sitting at your desk on a Zoom meeting, if you're on Zoom, it's not the same as someone walking by your desk and seeing like, wow, Tom's having a tough day today. I'm going to stop and ask him how he's doing.
That's right.
We miss that.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my poor friends who are extroverts really struggle. Oh,
yeah.
All of us struggled, but for those of us who are introverts, it's a little easier.
It's a little bit easier.
A little easier. Yeah. But extroverts really suffering. Gosh.
I mean, and there's so many studies or statistics out there now about what's happened with depression being higher, drug use going up, the amount of suicide, the rate of suicide. Mm-hmm. It's heartbreaking what's happening.
Absolutely. And isn't it obvious to me, my humble opinion, that it's connected to the very thing we're talking about, right?
That's right.
It's the number one thing. Well, of course, we need air and water, shelter. Yeah.
You need those.
Yes. I mean, that's for survival, but to thrive.
That's right.
We must be connected to other people. It's just...
And here's what's sad about it too. It's so easy, especially if you're a little introverted or a little shy. And when I'm actually an ambivert, right? I'm right in the middle between the two. Although I get my energy much more on the introverted side. Like I'll go cross country skiing and that's how I get my energy.
So actually you're an introvert.
Okay.
That's actually the truth, right? Many of us say that we're some of both. We all have social skills and that's how people think they're not introverted.
Yeah. And when I've taken it, Myers-Briggs? I'm like a smack dab in the middle.
The test forces you. Yeah, 1 point. The test always forces you to be 1 point over.
That's right. And so that's the test for me.
Yeah.
I'm an introvert.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
But like, it's easy for us to, when you are more introverted or shy, it's easy to slide into those habits of isolation.
Correct. That's the thing as introverts. Mm-hmm. It's so tempting to fill the tank by isolation, alone time. And it's essential for introverts. But yes, so as an introvert, I've learned to make connections, relationships a priority.
Yeah. Because you have to
do it, because then it drains me.
That's right.
But several times a week, I need to, if it's not structured in, you know, I need to meet someone for coffee, or I need to make sure I am playing pickleball, or, you know, a phone call with a friend. And by the way, you know, I've really rediscovered phone calls over the last handful of years or so, right? For a while, all we were doing is texting and emailing.
Yep.
And I got a butt dial from a dear friend of mine. Didn't even mean to call me. We ended up talking for like an hour and a half.
Oh.
And we were like, this is so fun. This feels so good.
Why don't we do more of it?
Yes.
Because we tell ourselves, oh, I'm too busy. But yet, study after study after study confirms that social connection is one of the best things we can do for our health, for our happiness, for our well-being. Yeah, it is. I like how you're doing that too, though, because Tom, it's not like, okay, I'm introverted. I need to go out to parties and I need to be the life of the party, blah, blah, blah. No, it's how can I work it into my life? I like your reaction right now.
The listener can't see, but there's a grimace on my face, right? I mean, I'll go to parties. I've learned to, you know, tolerate and manage them, but right, it's not my scene. I like a small group. That's just, that's what works better for me.
Okay. I have no idea. I warned you ahead of time that things will come up, right?
Yeah, totally.
I read this article recently. It was a year ago, but I remembered it because my husband and I, we love to host get-togethers.
Yeah.
Right. And I read this article about how some people like to host, some people like to guest. But here's a mistake that the hosts can make. Because we just opened an open house in our new neighborhood back in Arkansas, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, whatever, when we were there. Now, it's easy to think, well, you know, 20, 30 people showed up. If they enjoyed themselves and if they liked us, they'll have us over to their house. That's a fatal trap that we fall into. Many people don't like to host. It's actually kind of rare to like to host. But we think we read meaning into it, and there's no meaning at all.
Yes. Well, it's an assumption that we make. It's kind of like the love language thing, right?
That's right.
There's a way we like to receive love, and there's a way we like to give love. And we assume, until we know this truth, that other people have the same love languages, and they don't. Some do. But
that's right.
Most don't.
Most don't. And that's okay. And but it's so easy to fall into that trap of, well, they're not responding in kind, so I guess they didn't like me. And
it's an assumption.
It's an assumption.
A belief that's just in our mind. Mm-hmm. And this is where we get into trouble, right? Because we're not seeing the world clearly.
That's right. And we make those kind of assumptions. I mean, that's just one type of assumption, but we do that all the time.
Absolutely.
You know?
Huge.
And you just said it too, then we're not seeing the world clearly because we're thinking that it's our perception.
Yes.
I was reminded of something. It's not the actual event and it's not the actual object that creates our feeling. It's how we feel about that.
Yes.
That determines whether it's a good thing or a bad thing or happy or sad, whatever.
Yes. The interpretation we make, the meaning we make of it. Yes.
Yeah.
And so this is why I love the study of mindfulness.
Oh.
And yoga, even.
So really?
Fairly new. So almost exactly 2 years ago, I graduated from yoga teacher training. That is, and I learned so many things, of course. But that is one of the things that most stayed with me from my teacher, Jennifer Gray, is that yoga ultimately helps us see things more clearly.
Okay.
Amazing, right?
It is amazing. So why is that?
Well, because of all the things that yoga does. Yoga settles the nervous system. Yoga gets us out of that thinking mind and out of our head, right? Which is almost always judging unless we're aware of it and catching ourselves and making interpretations. So it gets us into our body, into an aligned state that's calmer. It helps us be more mindful. It slows the system down. And a combination of all those things and the spirit, I haven't even talked about the spirit. Yoga is actually a spiritual practice. Most of us come to it for the physical in Western society. To it for the physical benefit, which is phenomenal. No reason to not, but you're going to get extra benefits too if you're practicing yoga.
I can see how that would be because I used to go to a yoga class when I lived in Chicago. It was like a 90-minute class. And now I practice at home. And what I find is that's when it's easier for me to do yoga and get into a mindful state, if you will, than if I'm just trying to do meditation. It gives me something to focus on, like, oh, the stretch of the muscle or the way that feels or whatever.
Exactly. This is why, in my understanding and my belief, this is why yoga was developed.
Oh.
Because that's been true since thousands of years ago.
That's right.
So our ancestors knew, they learned.
That's
body first, then so yoga always ends with shavasana. What is shavasana except meditation?
Yeah,
because it's the hardest pose. That's why it's last. Shavasana is the hardest pose. The body isn't moving. We're laying there.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, but so when you do that pose well, that's an amazing feeling.
Yes. And so do you find that? It sounds like, I guess it's a leading question. So after yoga and then shavasana, you come off the mat and what's your experience? What do you notice?
Like just very calm, at peace.
Yes.
And it's funny that is the hardest pose when it's like you're laying on the mat. Physically, it's easy to do.
Correct.
There's no contortion of your body. But man, and Dee was my teacher, my yoga instructor back in Chicago. And that was, and she'd come around, you're like, you're all laying there, and she'd come around and she'd just like gently pull on your neck a little bit.
Yes, yes, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was heaven. That was just heaven.
Yes. So when we're at peace, we do see the world more clearly. We see ourselves more clearly. We see our thought patterns more clearly. And it's easier then to notice our assumptions and to not act on them. It's easier to notice our almost constantly judging mind and come back to that neutrality and accept, oh, maybe this unpleasant thing is happening. And I know it's temporary. It's going to pass. No, I don't love it. Don't have to love it.
And, that's right.
And I don't have to put too over focus on it either. That's the other thing.
That's right.
So easy when we're just consumed with our everyday lives and aren't stopping and slowing down to stay in that reactive mind and stay with, I like this, I don't like this. And
it's good or it's bad.
It's good or it's bad. Yeah.
Right. And right there, as soon as we make that judgment, we're down a path.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Have you heard that it's an ancient Chinese fable or story about the farmer, and he's got the stallion, and the stallion wins a prize, and his neighbors are like, oh, congratulations, congratulations. And he's like, who knows what is good and what is bad? And then like a week later, the stallion gets stolen or something. And they're like, oh no. And the neighbors are like, oh no. And they're offering their condolences. And he's like, who knows what is good or what is bad? And it goes on and on and on. But it's that thing, who knows? Right. Something happens. We don't know. It can be unpleasant.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
It can be sad. It can make you, whatever it might be.
Yes.
But man, that judgment, because you're right, the judging mind, we're judging all the time, ourselves, others, and circumstances.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. My mind is going in a million places at once. See if I can pull it in here. So two things, if I can remember them both. Happier people, they don't suppress the unpleasantness. So like in that story.
Yeah.
There is a celebration when we win a prize. It's
That's
okay
right.
to enjoy it.
Right.
And there's grief when we lose something we value. It's okay to grieve. But happier people know that both are temporary and they allow both to be.
Yeah.
And that allows flow to happen and them to appreciate the happier moments. It's less happy people who try to suppress the unpleasant and avoid it. And then they're also suppressing or avoiding the pleasant. And so they don't enjoy life as much.
Okay. So you can't suppress the one without suppressing the other.
It's impossible.
Oh.
It's impossible.
That makes perfect sense, in my humble
opinion. Am I a true, total expert? No. What do I really know? I'm just a struggling human being like everybody else. And I've been doing this work for almost 40 years.
Yeah.
Like the patterns become so clear to you after decades of working with so many people.
Yeah. So I'd love your take on this because I see this quite a bit on LinkedIn because I'm on LinkedIn more than Facebook. When I say I see it more there, I'm not on there a lot, like weekly, but not, I don't live by it.
Shall we just say happier people do social media less.
That's right.
Just going to affirm that.
That's right. Because it's like, that's just a whole nother jungle out there. But you do see a lot of, it feels like the toxic positivity, you know, like just get over it. Just suck it up. And it's like, if something has hurt, it's okay to feel that. It doesn't mean that you're going to stay there.
Correct.
Right?
That's what happier people know and believe. So they find ways to support themselves through the grief. And so both my parents died over the past few years, even though they led, you know, long, good lives. And still, it's like it rocks your world, right? I'm 60 years old now. So I was in my late 50s when both my parents died.
Yeah.
And it rocks your world.
It rocks your world.
Yeah. So, but I knew it was temporary. And by temporary, I don't mean 5 minutes.
No.
It took months for me to feel any sense of normalcy after each of my parents died. And it was about 18 months apart. Like I just recovered from my dad's death.
Oh, geez.
And then my mom died. Yeah. Like,
oh, here we go again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. But that's an important point. It's not 5 minutes. And yet we feel that pressure, right? And sometimes it's self-imposed. Maybe it's by people around us because they want us to feel better.
Well, especially with major grief. People are so uncomfortable with it. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to say. They want you to be back, you know,
to normal,
happy, sparkly self. Mm-hmm. And there are moments, this is the other thing. No, what I've learned, again, this took me so long to figure out. When I was young, I thought we could only experience one feeling at a time.
That's right.
Life is so much more nuanced than that. So even in the midst of, you know, the shock of my parents dying within the first few days, there was great laughter at remembering the good times, for instance, right?
Yeah.
Even joy in coming together in the ways we did to you know, for their funerals and whatnot.
That's right.
There were moments of joy, and it didn't mean that they didn't mean anything to us. It was just...
You're remembering good times.
Yes. And that was part of the healing.
Yes.
It's coming together and celebrating their lives and laughing about all the crazy things that happened.
The shenanigans.
The shenanigans. Yes.
That's right. That's right. It's interesting. And sorry about the loss of your parents.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. My dad passed away November 11th of this year.
And oh my gosh, that's not long ago. That's
not long ago.
A month ago.
Yeah. But it's exactly what you're saying, Tom. There are times where like, man, I feel like I'm grieving. Or in his case, his last week, he was in the hospital for 1 week. And it was a very, very hard week. He was going through heart failure, basically. He was 89. But he'd have moments of like delirium where we had to struggle with him to restrain him. And it's like, that is like, you never think you're going to have to do that with your dad. And it's heartbreaking. And it's like, oh my God, I'd wake up thinking about, oh, I got to save dad. I got to help dad, you know? But then, you know, it's like, I'm taking the dogs for a walk because we also adopted his dog. So now we have three dogs because we had two. And it's like, well, I'm not going to give his dog to a shelter. No, that she's our dog now. And that brought him comfort in his final days. So we're taking the three dogs for a walk and they're playing and, you know, they're diving into the snowbanks. How can you not stop and just savor that? That's just beauty in the moment.
Yes, exactly.
But it doesn't mean that, oh, well, now I'm over missing dad.
Correct.
No,
cancel each other out.
They don't. And I think that we make that mistake.
Correct.
You know, like even over Thanksgiving was a very odd time because it was right after he died.
Yeah.
Some people were like, oh, I know this is going to be a terrible time for you. And I'm like, well, it's going to be sad at times.
Yes. And different.
And different.
Very. You haven't ever celebrated this holiday without him on the planet.
Without him there. You know, even though we didn't always get together for Thanksgiving, I always talked to him.
You knew he was there. It's different.
It's different.
It's a huge change.
Yeah, it's a huge change. But so I think that's really important that people know that these are not isolated. Like you can experience all these, and sometimes you experience them in the course of 5 minutes.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
And there's nothing wrong with you when you do.
No. That's the thing, right? People think they're crazy. They literally have had ask me, am I crazy? Am I crazy that I'm having joy when I'm grieving? No. You're just human.
You're human.
And I love that story about the dogs. You were honoring your dad. You were fulfilling his wishes. He wanted you, I am sure.
Oh, yeah.
To be out there with the dogs, taking good care of the dogs. He wanted you to enjoy that snow. That it doesn't take away from his... What he meant to you.
No. And dad was, I'm named after my dad. Okay.
Really?
So his name was Bob Kaler. I'm Bobby Kaler. And I kept my maiden name because he never had any sons. And that's one of the reasons I kept my maiden name. But one of the things we shared, and I think all the Kalers do, is a love of nature. So when I'm out there in nature, I actually feel close to him. But even when he was alive, I felt close to him when I was out in nature because it was something we could share.
Yes. Okay. Don't you love how he's still with you in this?
Yeah. Place? Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
So I think that's important for people to remember. And also, I think sometimes people try to rush the person who is grieving because it's they're uncomfortable.
Exactly.
And to just be like, hey, this is what I need to feel. And I'll tell you what, I had pretty much four podcasts scheduled for every Monday starting the day. That's usually my schedule. I'm like, I'm not doing that right now. Mm-hmm. And so this is one of the few that I did not cancel because I took it down to one every Monday going forward. I'm like, no, I need more space for me to show up in these interviews and truly enjoy them and savor them.
Exactly.
This
is exactly
felt good.
What I did when both my parents died. I
really?
Scaled back. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I needed to. My body told me.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't really a choice. It was, but my body was like exhausted after way less. I didn't have the reserves. My body needed to like metabolize this new way of being.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I have never scaled back even when I needed to. Mm-hmm. And yet I had complete conviction. You need this. You need to scale back. You need to create more space in your life.
So you were listening to that voice from within, that intuitive knowing, and you're honoring it. Okay. This happier people do this.
Really?
Love this. Yes.
Tell me more about that. Cause okay. Yes. I thought maybe I'm crazy. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about that, Tom.
No. Think about like, interesting. We're talking about death. Cause this is coming up like on their deathbeds, people who have regrets, what are the kinds of things they regret? It's two major things. It's not making the most of their relationships, back to where we started.
Yep.
And not honoring that inner voice. What I mean by that is not honoring their passions, right? Doing what they...
Yeah.
Like people who have done what they thought they should do have regrets versus honoring that inside. You're not going to regret canceling three out of four podcasts for Mondays.
No.
You're not going to regret that.
No.
You'll figure it out. You'll figure all that out.
That's right.
If you did it, if you had stayed with the podcast, you would not have been showing up as you wanted to. You already said that. And I suspect would be exhausted.
That's right.
And then it's a snowball, right? Because then you're not showing up in any way in the things of your life, right? It just compounds, gets worse.
Yeah. But I think listening to that inner wisdom or that inner voice. It's funny how much this has come up on recent podcasts, because I think it maybe can be hard for people to hear it and heed it. Is that your experience as well?
Well, if they're unfamiliar with it, it's they say I don't know statements come up. I don't know how. I don't hear anything, you know? And so then it's a matter of really slowing the process down and finding some exceptions to that, because all of us really have an inner voice. And so then I just start listening for an example. And then I'll say, oh, there's an example. You just talked about it. And from a very simple thing, I'm trying to think of an example from my own life, like when to take the dog out. I don't know, you know, and maybe I avoided, I don't know, an accident or something. You know what I mean? Like
that's
I guess
right.
You can't predict, you can't know that, but
you have these people have feelings.
Example, but,
Well, when you scaled back after your parents passed, that was your inner voice telling you that you needed to. I think you said something really important there, Tom. You said it's slowing things down. If we're rushing, in my opinion, and I want your opinion as well, I've watched so many people over the years, whether it's neighbors or people that I've met through work, you know, clients and stuff, we're rushing through our days at such a frenetic pace.
Yes.
That I think it's hard to tap into that.
Correct. Absolutely. You know? I 100% agree, if not more. When I am more frantic, when I'm rushing to things, when I'm just checking things off my to-do list.
Oh, And I love a to-do list.
I do too. And it feels really satisfying.
It does.
It's to cross them off the list. But yes, then it is harder. And so it's a skill. It's absolutely can be learned. It's a practice.
It's a practice.
I'm still practicing it.
We're never really done with it.
No. Not so much.
And I truly do think that is one of the great benefits of coaching or therapy, because that creates the space where a person slows down.
Yes.
And then with a skilled listener, you can hear those things. Yes. And it's like, oh, wow. You know, speaking of skilled listening too, because I want to make sure we get to this. This is one of the things I said, I want to make sure we talk about this.
Yeah.
Your book and the documentaries that led to it. Mm-hmm. So tell us, I guess, fill the listener in a little bit on the book and how it came about, that type of thing. And then let's get into the happier people.
It.
Okay.
You got it. So, okay. So I had my dream job. For 7 years, I couldn't wait to go to work every morning. Most days, every now and then, there's an exception, but generally speaking. So I was a senior counseling psychologist at a college. So I got to do the individual psychotherapy that I love, and I got to do teaching that I adore. Perfect combination for me. And it like brought all of my passions and skills together. I was going to retire there. I was attached, right? I had a plan.
Oh,
right. Yeah. I loved this job. And things changed dramatically when a new coworker showed up. This person hated the ground I walked on, undermined me. This person had more power than me, you know, with the budget. And so, I mean, it was
like, that's painful.
It was very painful. Thank you. Yes. I ended up quitting because I and not after a struggle. I tried everything I could to make it work. Consulted every smart person I know and tried everything.
Wow.
Wasn't working. And I became depressed. I was so miserable. Finally, my husband said one day, you've got to quit that job. It was like making him miserable. Poor guy. So I left my dream job. And I noticed in the midst of my grief, really happy people all around me. Ordinary people. I'm not talking about millionaires or celebrities. I'm talking about everyday average people like you and me. And I just started noticing and it just snowballed. I started asking questions. What do you do? Why are you so happy? And I decided to do these interviews on camera and make like mini documentaries, I call them.
Yeah.
First day of filming was one of the happiest days of my own life. Because think about it. I'm sitting with happy people really talking about what makes them tick.
Yep.
And I was coming alive.
Mm.
And I'd known for years I would write a book one day, but I had no idea what the book was going to be about. That day I go, this is what my book's going to be about.
At the first day you knew that.
First day. Yeah. Within an hour or two. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many interviews did you do?
Oh gosh, I think it was 11 formal interviews. And then I weave in the book, my own personal experiences and other people I know and client experiences over the years.
Okay.
I've been working. Yeah. And a little bit of research. Although this is not really so much about research. I wanted this to be way more, you know, experiential.
Yeah. And now tell me about the title, Full Heart Living.
Yeah.
Why that title?
Yeah. So initially the title was Choosing Happiness. I was going to emphasize choices we make because it is a lot about deliberate choices.
Yeah.
But I realized that the people I was interviewing were saying that they live with their full heart. And it's what we talked about earlier about this lack, avoiding or denying the unpleasant or the sad or the down feelings or emotions or experiences. Happier people embrace all of life. They live with their full heart. When they're sad, they're sad. When they're happy, they're happy. If they're grieving, if they're mad, they know they're mad and they know it's temporary. And, you know, this is what I was going to say earlier. Remember when I said there were two things?
Oh, that's right.
I remember? So happier people are very proficient at even in those downtimes, they look for the silver lining. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not about denying or saying the bad part isn't happening. It's also saying, is there a way I can make lemonade
out
of this? Or is there something good? So even like, I'll never forget my son I'll just say this. He came back from his high school psychology class. And I think it was his senior, maybe his junior year. He was driving by them. And his high school psychology teacher, I can't remember the exercise or what it was, helped him see that like when he was late or stuck in traffic, that he could be negative about that and complaining, or he could look for something positive.
That's right.
It's not denying the inconvenience of being late. It's just saying, is there a yes and here? Is there a both and? And he realized it gave him more time to listen to his music.
Yeah.
Isn't that a great example from a 16-year-old who can be pretty negative and God love him. You know, I love my son. He's so funny and a great guy. But, you know, he's a pretty intense guy.
Yeah.
Like, he does not like to be inconvenienced.
That's right.
If Elliot can do this in the car, which also he's a very aggressive driver, if he can slow down, take a breath, and look at, I get to listen to my music more, I think most of us can do that.
That's right. And, you know, someone else was talking about something similar. And it's like, so you're on the way to like a presentation and you get stuck in traffic.
Yeah.
What do? You can sit there and you can stew and you can get more and more and more upset.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can call the client. You can let them know. Maybe a colleague could cover it. Maybe you can spend that time saying, going over the presentation in your head. You've got all these choices. But choosing the one where we just sit and stew and get more and more and more upset, it doesn't help us.
It doesn't serve anyone.
No. Now, and I'm curious too, now, what is a, because it came up a lot in some of our different correspondence, you say conversation sparks.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah. So once my book came out, I was going around, of course, doing public speaking gigs. I started doing with traditional book reading events, hoping to inspire people to do the things I learned. So let me quick say what those are.
Yes.
We've covered a couple of them. Actually, we've essentially covered all of them. But to make it clear, happier people, they do a ton of things. There's 20 chapters in the book. They do really self-care. They align with their values. They're grateful. But the top three or four things, depending on how you count, I learned is that happier people connect with others.
Mm-hmm.
They connect with themselves. They know who they are and they're mindful. And they connect with their passions. They do things they adore and they do a ton of them. When they do any or all of these in the service of others, holy grail, look out, power. So I was hoping to inspire people to connect more deeply. And I would end my talk saying that I hope I've inspired you by this talk to connect more deeply in these areas. And people would look at me like deer in the headlight. They didn't know how to do it.
Oh.
So I realized I needed to do more than just talk about it. I needed to bring them an experience where do it in the moment. And so I created this experience where I give people a conversation prompt. I call it a conversation spark, right?
Love it.
Spark brings some energy. And they practice deep listening with one another in dyads.
Uh-huh.
So one person talks about a really important part of their life. Can be with a stranger. It could be with the person you're married to. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's super powerful with either one. And the other person just listens really deeply and then reflects back themes and values. From what I heard you say just now, this is what the story seems to be about. And here are some things I think are important to you. Okay, you do that.
Love
connections
that.
Go off all over the place. We connect with ourselves because we're looking at, we talk about something that's important. And then someone else says, here's what I heard you say. And here are your values. And so we connect with the other person, we connect with ourselves, and our passions start to come alive, in part based on the conversation sparks themselves. So then I developed this little game, Full Heart Living Conversation Sparks. So there's 102 conversation starters based on the themes in my book.
That is awesome.
And thank you. And the listening instructions are included. It's this little box. It's like a double card deck box.
Yeah, that is amazing.
Thank you.
Okay, so here's where my mind is going.
Yeah, please.
So I went to grad school at Case Western over in Cleveland. And one of our professors was Richard Boyatzis. And Richard, he wrote Primal Leadership along with Dan Goleman. And then Resonant Leadership. And one of the activities that he would have people do is you had a pair and you would sit down and you would share, how would you answer this question? If it were not for this person, I would not be the person that I am today.
I wish that were in my deck. Okay, please go. That's a great one.
Isn't it great? And I use that in a lot of the leadership retreats I've done. And then each person gets to share. And it's truly magical. Like you hear the energy, you hear everything pick up in the room.
Yes.
What was fascinating to me about that, Tom, when you were talking about your deck, is I've done that with teams who have worked together for 20 years.
Yes.
20 plus years.
They know everything about each other.
They think they know each other. And then they're like, oh, they do that. And they're like, oh, now I understand. At such a deeper level.
Bobby, I got to tell you, I did this with my husband. I created the whole experience, right? I created the questions. I assumed I knew what I would say. And of course, I assumed I knew what he would say.
Of course.
That we went through this with this structure. This is part of our couples group. We did this. It was actually when the game was in development. Yeah. I was blown away by what I learned about him.
Yeah.
And by what I said to him in a way that I'd never said before. So we've been together 30 years. 30 years.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So powerful. And that's what I said. Why I said, you could be with your spouse.
That's right.
Your best friend or a stranger. I have seen magic happen with strangers and with people you've known each other.
That's right.
Forever.
I mean, with strangers, it can create such a fast and deep connection.
Yes.
You know, because we're stripping away all the nonsense, and we're getting to a much deeper level.
Correct.
I love that. I love that, the card deck thing. You'll have to send me a link so I can put that in the show notes.
Oh, sure.
And here's something too, Tom, in the, I don't know if this was in one of our correspondences back and forth. You said, when people connect with others, you put in parentheses, and I loved this, they spend time with folks they adore and who love them back.
Oh.
Because sometimes if we're not spending time with folks who adore us, that can wear on us, right? It wears away at us. So I thought that was a really important point in that.
Okay. First of all, may I say this? Okay. This is fascinating. You just read back to me my own words. We sort of did the conversation sparks thing, right? I got kind of choked up as you said this about folks who adore us and who we adore. I got choked up. I'm wiping a little tear away from my eye. It's so important to that. Those are my words. And I believe it, you know, just to the depth of my soul, what I practice and what I preach. And so many things were happening there. Like, you really heard me. You heard my message. It meant something to you. Mm-hmm. So that's part of it that's happening for me right now, is that being recognized, like something that's meaningful to me is meaningful to you. The depth of the, like, I just know it in my soul, right? I know that this is true, that it's essential. So that's moving to me too. I think that's part of why I got choked up. Back to the question itself, because you said, if we spend time who aren't so thrilled with us, that wears on us. So like me in that, my dream job, there was this
person
who couldn't stand me. Mm-hmm. Like, there's some, that's triggering for us.
That's right.
We can all do that a little bit. We all of us have to work with people who don't like us, right? That's part of life. But when it's, you know, a full-time job day in and day out, and I, like I said, I've been over backward to make things. I tried everything I think of to work with this person, and this, they weren't having none of it. It weared on me, even though I've been in the field and I consulted with all these smart people. I'm too sensitive. I'm a really sensitive soul.
Yeah.
And people with less sensitivity, I think, can put up with a little more of that. It doesn't bug them as much. But most of us do get triggered, even if we're not highly sensitive. It's triggering. It's contagious.
It,
we start to doubt ourselves. Here's the thing. Because I've done hundreds of talks, so many people come up to me afterward or say during the presentation, the same thing happened to me at work, right? It's not uncommon.
Yep.
And most people can't survive it for very long. We must be with people who love us. And then when we are, gosh, when I am in the presence of people who I know love me and I love them back. So it's the reciprocity, right? It's the symbiotic thing. It's back and forth. Mm-hmm. It's not one way. It's that I love you, you love me. I feel it. We feed off each other. Like I was just with two of my great nephews about 10 days or so ago, who I don't see very often. And it's just such a joy to, you know, to be with them and making each other laugh and just doing silly
things.
And having fun. It just feeds the soul.
It does. And I think being honest about who those people are and who, like, I had, this was years ago. I had a very, very good friend. I would have said my best friend. I thought that we'd be best friends forever. And it occurred to me, I was going through therapy to deal on some other, with some issues, just how badly she actually treated me, how disrespectful she was. And at first I'm like, well, she's not doing this on purpose. You know, I must be reading it wrong. And then I started noticing the patterns, you know, as my self-awareness grew. And I'm like, hey, you're one of my best friends. And when you do this, that really feels disrespectful. It feels like it's crossing a line. And she was having none of it.
You tried to talk to her about it.
I was that honest with her.
Right.
And I spent probably 18 months really, because I'm like, this is a valued friendship. Like, this is like a lifelong best friend. And she's like, that's your problem. And I'm like, well, and at a point I thought, maybe that might be right. But the problem really is, how can I respect myself if I'm allowing someone else to disrespect me?
Yes.
And that was hard. And I think that's probably why that really spoke to me, with folks they adore and who love them back.
Yes.
You know? So that's why that caught my attention. Because I've seen that with other people over the years too. It's like, but I'm trying. It's like, are we staring too long at a closed door?
Exactly.
And sometimes we do.
Exactly. You know? So two things come to me as you talk about this. One is your self-esteem improved through this whole process. Right?
Oh.
It was on the way to improving, and then you confronted your friend.
That's right.
And then it got even better, I think, as you set limits with her.
Yeah.
What was the other thing? I lost it. I can't remember. I just love that you woke up, that you saw
right.
the truth, that which we were talking about earlier. You woke up to what the realness of what was really happening. You paid attention to your insides. You were having these reactions.
Yep.
And you honored yourself.
That's right.
And even at the expense, and it took 18 months.
Yeah. I tried everything.
Like, yeah. You ended the friendship because it was no longer serving you.
It was no longer serving probably either one of us, you know? And it was one of those things where I'm like, I tried and it's like, okay, then this is just, we were great friends for a period of probably 7 years and I'll always cherish that time.
Yes.
And now it's time for a new choice.
Well, we evolve, right?
That's right.
You evolved. She either did or didn't. It sounds like maybe she didn't evolve.
She didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You certainly evolved. I have struggled with this a lot in my own life too, because I value relationships so much. It's hard for me to lose a friend.
Oh, it hurts.
I hang on. Yeah, it hurts. I don't want the pain. But you're absolutely right. This is what I'm still learning this, to be totally honest. But yes, that we move, we shift, our needs shift. There are times when a certain person, you know, it's a really good match. And yes, so for years and years and years, it works for both people. And then, yeah, people do come in and out of our lives. And,
they do.
And we must let go.
And it doesn't mean that friendship wasn't really valuable for it, because
exactly.
it was. I still cherish it. And
yes.
maybe she was growing. Maybe we were just growing in different directions.
Yes.
And that's okay too.
Correct.
You know, because the truth of the matter is, by the end, I probably wasn't a great friend for her either. But instead of trying to, like, you know, knock each other's heads together, mm-hmm. there comes a point where you just, before that, I would say I was very much a doormat in my life.
And I was, what a valuable lesson. Wow.
Oh my God. Because I have high pleaser in me.
Oh yeah.
And now it's like, okay, that is a strength. There's great strengths attached to that.
There's a time for that. Yes.
There's a time for it, right? And there's a time when it can be taken too far. So
exactly.
it was learning. It was just learning, you know?
Beautiful. Great story.
I want to ask you a question real quick,
Please. Because
I wanted to make sure I got to this. On your website, I saw one of the programs, I think it's a program or a workshop that you do, is one called Befriending the Self.
Yes.
What does that mean? I love that title.
Thank you. So if I had to distill what I do with people I work with, whether it's coaching clients or psychotherapy clients, or even often in teaching, if I had to distill it down into a phrase, it would be this, that I'm teaching them or helping them remember how to love themselves. Ultimately, that's what it always comes back to, because the things that we struggle with are so often these beliefs in our minds instilled often very early.
That's right.
That we are not acceptable. We are not okay.
That's right.
And so Befriending Themselves is a workshop that it's about self-compassion, mindful self-compassion, based in large part, but not solely on the work of Christopher Germer and Kristen Neff. So they have this phenomenal mindful self-compassion program filled with practices and skills and many meditations about learning to love them, love people. And now the listener can't see this. As soon as I talk about this, both hands go over my heart.
That's right.
Because that's the number one meditation. I'll just quickly describe it, where one puts one, you put your hand on your own heart and you feel the heat, you feel the pressure, and you imagine your hand is imbued with the power to instill your whole being with self-love.
Interesting.
That's just the first of many great skill building and activities that we can use to learn to love ourselves.
Because we forget it over the years.
Well, because we get programmed. It's programming.
Oh my God.
People don't mean to teach us otherwise, but we're in this culture that is very judgmental, that is, you know, capitalism is driven by, you know, we want to buy things to improve ourselves, to look better, so we'll be lovable. And caregivers are acting out of their own woundedness And they're ignorant. They don't know that they don't mean to do it, but they give us these messages. And there is the good news is we can reprogram them. Again, it doesn't happen in 5 minutes. It doesn't happen in one meditation. But over time, with repetition, we know the neuroplasticity of the brain. We learn new brain patterns.
And it is very possible. It is. I mean, I've gone through that for myself. So it is very possible. It takes a little bit of work, right? And it doesn't happen overnight. But that also doesn't mean it is a decades-long pursuit,
right.
You know?
Right.
When you're talking about the caregiver, I had someone on my podcast like 100 episodes ago. Mm-hmm. It was only because it was October of 2021, I think. And he said that trauma that is not transformed is passed on.
Correct.
And no one means to do that, but it can happen. And we get all these messages. And even without trauma, we get the messages of if you're exuberant when you're a kindergartner, then you need to settle down. Well, that's also like, that's enthusiasm, but we're told it's bad. You know, it's just, we get so many messages that chip away at our essence over the years.
Exactly.
I love that you're helping people with that. I knew I was going to like that one. That's why I wanted to ask you. All right. So why don't you tell people, how can they find out more about you, more about the book, your work, your workshops, all that kind of good stuff?
Yeah, best place is my website. It's simply fullheartliving.com. Heart, of course, spelled H-E-A-R-T, fullheartliving.com.
Perfect. Perfect. And
I mean, I'm on social media too, although I try to, but yeah, Instagram and Facebook, a little bit on LinkedIn. But there is some good stuff. I have some good stuff coming out on Instagram and Facebook soon. I will say that.
Nice. Very good. And now I think you had mentioned maybe the workbook or something that you might
have. The workbook is always available for free. So every chapter in my book ends with workbook activity so people can really take the ideas immediately into their life. That part of the book is always available to download in PDF form on my website.
Nice.
If you click on the link on my website, there's a way to get, I think it's 25% off the book. Well, let's put it in the show notes because I always forget there's a code. It's like full or heart. We'll get it in the show notes.
We'll put it in the show notes. And if it's the same, you sent me the notes. It was like they get a 25% off the book if they order through fullheartliving.com and enter full at checkout.
That's it.
Okay. Yeah. But we'll also put that in the show notes. So perfect. Any final thoughts that you want to share before we wrap up?
Can I just say I felt like you and I practiced what we talked about right here, right? This was a totally organic conversation, as you told me it would be. We just connected here. We did it. So the listener, if you didn't realize, we're doing it right here. This is what we're talking about. Just really being real, coming to the table. We're playing off of each other. We're saying our truth. That's connection. That's connecting.
Yeah. I love that. I love that insight. So, and thank you for, you know, playing along and being willing, because it's like, you never know what's going to, and I warned you at the beginning, I'm like, I have no idea what's going to come up, but I follow it and we'll see. So thank you so much, Tom. And thank you for the work that you're doing out there in the world.
Pleasure. Thank you. Be well.
I hope that you loved that conversation. I know that I did. And as I listened back to it, there were so many takeaways. So here we go. The first thing that really stood out to me, and I think this is so important, is that the number one thing that we need to thrive is connections. And I think that the pandemic in some ways has kind of interrupted that for some people. But I just think that's important, and it's a message that we can't hear too much, but the value of connections just cannot be understated. Another takeaway that I had was that we need to be careful of the interpretations that we make out of a otherwise neutral event. Because whatever that interpretation is, that will largely determine how we feel about that event. Another one that stands out to me is that the mind's default is judging unless we catch it and we quiet it. Because when we're at peace, we see the world more clearly, as Tom says. We see our thought patterns more clearly, and it's easier to see our assumptions more clearly. And when we can see our assumptions and our thought patterns, that's when we can make more intentional choices about how we want to move forward. So I absolutely loved that. Another part of the conversation that I thought was really important is when we were talking about grieving, and we talked about how it's possible to feel multiple feelings at once. You know, we're not purely in a grieving state, purely in a sad state. There can be more moments of joy, moments of wonder. And that's part of the human experience. And I know that for me, I know Tom talked about this as well, but I know for me, when I was younger, I thought, well, it's always just one way. There's one thing I should be feeling. And that's simply not true. Life is so much more multifaceted than that. Another thing that I really liked, or that really caught my attention, I should say, is he said that, you know, in his research for his book, that a regret that people have on their deathbeds is not honoring their inner voice. And by that, you know, he extends that to their true passions. And I think, man, that is just a regret. That must be hell on earth. And I hope that's a regret that I don't have. And I hope that's a regret that none of you have, right? Because this is our time to honor that voice and to honor those passions, whatever those might be. And finally, another one that stood out to me when he was talking about the situation with his former coworker is that it's really hard to sustain being around people who either trigger us or who don't feed us. And I love how Tom put it, happiness is around people that we adore and who adore us back. And I hope that you're surrounded by those types of people in your life. The final thing I do want to mention too is that I hope that you'll go to Tom's website, check out all that he has to offer, including, I love that deck of cards that he was talking about. I think that would be an absolute fabulous thing to get, especially since Valentine's Day is right around the corner. What a wonderful way to experience Valentine's Day, the holiday of love, with our loved ones. So check out the show notes for all those great links, and I hope that you'll go and check those things out. As always, I want to thank you so much for tuning in and for listening and for supporting us. For all of you who have given us such lovely reviews, I just thank you from the bottom of my heart for those. If you haven't done so already, I hope that you'll hit that subscribe or follow button so that you'll never miss another episode. Have a great week, and I hope that you continue to thrive no matter what.